Most bankers aren't ready to help you until after their third cup of coffee. But with Central National Bank's after-hours service, you don't have to wait for the bank lobby to open to get help. You can contact us from 6 to 8:30 in the morning or from 5 to 10 in the evening, and we'll connect you to a real, live, local person who can answer questions and fix problems 7 days a week. Bank different. Bank Central. Central National Bank. Member FDIC.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
This is a Rogue Media Network podcast. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How is your social battery right now? Are you drained, bursting with energy? It's at this level because maybe you don't have enough boundaries, less social in the winter. There can be many reasons. It can be easy to ignore our social battery and spread ourselves thin, especially with social gatherings picking up after the winter. What's the right amount of socializing for you? And how do you recharge? Maybe you thrive around people, or maybe you just need some more time alone. Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. Therapy is helpful for learning positive coping skills and how to set boundaries. It empowers you to be the best version of yourself, and it isn't just for those who've experienced major trauma. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/365 today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/365.
This is 365 Sports, powered by Sikkim365.com.
Waters, Sam Kahn of The Athletic joins us now, and Sam wrote a fantastic article. I'll put the link up in the chat right now for people to see about what an 80-team Super League would have looked like had it happened this last season. He still has Michigan winning the whole thing. But, Sam, before we get to the column that you wrote and how you broke it down, obviously there were a lot of obstacles to this ever happening. But this is the first actual proposal on something like this we've heard that has rules and, you know, the way things would break down. How do you think that this would eventually come about, or something like this would come about?
Obviously, there are, like you said, a lot of hurdles, namely three that I think of, which are the TV networks, the Big Ten, and the SEC, because I think any plan that engulfs the whole sport has to have those entities on board, for better or worse. I mean, whether you agree with it or not, that those are the players who hold the cards. If we say that we can get them on board, my gut feeling is that something smaller than this would be the end result. I don't think that it would be possible for them to do something of this scale, maybe half of this. I like this idea better than what we have now. I will tell you that I like this. I like the 80 team setup better than we have now. But I think that the intentions of this group, the 20 member group that dubbed this plan College Sports Tomorrow, I think their intentions are in the right place, because they talk about, you know, revenue sharing and contracts and, you know, a objective playoff structure as opposed to a subjective one. And I think they're thinking about the right things. It's just, I think it's going to take years for us to get to anything like this.
Sam, is it just another sign that the sort of, I guess, feeling of being fed up, waiting for the actual leadership to kind of lead, that now you've got ESPN, you've got College Sports Tomorrow, and all of that entails, people trying to come up with solutions? Is it just a sign that there's just sort of nobody at the steering wheel right now in your mind, and that there's kind of, I don't know if vultures is the right term, but there's definitely people circling trying to grab hold of that leadership?
Yeah, no doubt, because I think it's an acknowledgement that people don't like where we're heading. And I will say, there have been many inflection points along that journey, but I think the biggest one that people have had to reckon with is the death of the Pac-12. Because for all the things that have happened in the last 25 years, none, I don't think, have resonated quite like that one. Like, Oklahoma and Texas resonated in a big way. Obviously, the how close we got to doing the Pac-16 and all that. But the last real major shakeup, I guess, that I can think of, I guess, is, you know, the death of the Big East and the death of the Southwest Conference. But the fact that one of the major conferences that existed and had a lot of success and had a lot of appeal and occupies an important part and a large part of the geographic landscape, I think the death of that, and knowing that, like you said, we're seeing people mobilize, and, you know, you wonder if the Big Ten and the SEC are just going to try to snatch up all the relevant brands and then try to make their own thing. I think most people outside those leagues will say, we don't want that. And so that's why I think it's important, when you look at this group that proposed this, that some of the people on board are the president, the chancellor at Syracuse, and the president of West Virginia. Those are people who would not be probably in that in-group with the Big Ten and SEC, if the Big Ten and SEC do their own thing. And so I think it's an acknowledgement that, hey, we've got to do something, because if we don't, somebody else will.
Yeah, Sam, that's, you know, one of the things I think is funny. Every time we ask someone, including Brett Yormark last week when we had him on, is this Greg Sankey, does he have the best interests of all of college sports at heart, or is that just something he says? And most people say, yeah, I believe that he does. But everything it seems like he does, and Tony Petitti now to that end as well, doesn't seem like they do. So, you know, even like, they haven't commented on this yet, but if they commented and said it's an interesting idea and we'd like to see where it goes, that would floor me, even if they had no intention of ever enacting it.
Yeah, and the thing is that's part of the flaw in where we are right now, too, is that does Greg Sankey have the best, or Tony Petitti have the best interest of the sport in their minds and in their, in when they're thinking about that in their actions? And probably not. But is that really their job? I mean, that's the thing, is we're conference commissioners to assume agency over the entire sport, when really their job should be to look out for their members. And now, I think conference commissioners have become like the de facto leaders, because there really was no central power structure as the money grew. Like, when we got from what I think was an amateur sport 30, 40 years ago to what is now essentially a professionalized sport, and the money just exploded, somebody had to fill that vacuum, and conference commissioners have kind of become those people. And obviously the ones that have been the most successful have been the ones with the football programs that have been most successful. So, I don't think anybody should look at Sankey or Petitti as having any kind of altruism in all this, nor should they do that with Yormark or anybody else. Everybody's going to look out for their members and their conferences, but that's the flaw of kind of where we are. Is like, there's no real one person or one small group that's going to pull in sync together to make sure that everybody's taken care of.
Yeah, I was trying to think of the right term, and I guess power vacuum. There's a power vacuum right now in college sports, for certain. And yeah, I agree. Like, I mean, there's certain things that I think sometimes Sankey comes across the wrong way, but at the end of the day, I acknowledge, like, he's only worried about the SEC. That's all his job is to worry about, is the SEC. Now, Sam, with this article, you took the idea that College Sports Tomorrow put out there a couple of days back and applied it using last year's results, 80 teams, 8 divisions, the Super League, and how it would have looked last season. Can you just kind of take us through this exercise, sort of where you started and kind of what you, you know, came across along the way?
Yeah, this was an idea that came from one of my bosses, our managing editor, Costable managing editor, Jill Thaw. She messaged me about probably an hour after the story that Stu Mandel and Andrew Marchand posted about the details of all this. And she had said, hey, would you be up for doing a here's how this would have looked like last season story? And once I kind of got the gist of it, I was like, yeah, hell yeah, I'll do this. I was like, I've kind of been thinking about how could we rearrange the sport to bring back some geographical sanity in the leagues. And so knowing that, okay, we have to work in the parameters of this, and it's 80 teams, I can do this. So I think I got that message probably about 5:30. I think by the time I finished, it was probably about 1:30. And so it was a long sprint because while I have thought about this for a long time, trying to work within the parameters of doing 7 divisions, you know, split them off geographically, and then have one division that's specifically for the G5 and promotion and relegation, that was a really big challenge. Like, it was very easy for me to put all the Texas schools together. It was very easy to put all the Big Ten schools together and the SEC schools and all that stuff. But then when you have some of these other schools that have come into the power conferences, like your UCF, or your BYU, it became hard to find a place to put them with a 10-team limit. And so that was the real challenge of it. I did my best to adhere to traditional conference structures, geography, history, rivalries, and preserve as much of that as possible. But obviously there were some awkward, like, you know, I had South Carolina in the ACC, like, because you could only have 10 SEC schools, so 4 of them got to go. You know, I had debated whether or not to put Penn State into the Big Ten or the Big East, you know, where, you know, Southwest, if I brought the old Southwest Conference back, obviously Rice is not in it. You know, does Oklahoma and Oklahoma State go with them, or do they go with the old Big Eight schools? So it was a lot of that, but it was an interesting exercise. And to see, to me, I am one of these people who dreads a Super League because I just don't like where we're headed. But after putting this together, if this was the plan, I could kind of live with this. Like if people use the geography and the history as a guiding force in constructing the divisions, then I can kind of live with this because I think it does bring back what we have missed about college sports and all this realignment.
All right, Sam. So let's get into, I'm going to start with, I mean, you kind of nailed these conferences, and I'm not going to go through all 80. We'd have you here until you couldn't be on the show anymore. But the one that, the two that stuck out to me were the frequent flyer division, which had to be kind of the hardest one to make, given the fact that, you know, it is like a little bit scattershot when you start putting these teams in groups of 10, which is another, like, a less major reason why this would be difficult to happen, but one that would bear looking out. But the Southwest Conference back together and adding the Oklahoma schools, to me, was very chef's kiss on this. I kept scrolling down. I was like, I know he's the Texpert. That's the one that's going to be last. Was that the thing that when you start doing this, you're like, oh, man, if I could see these again, that would be great?
Oh, that was the first thing I did. When I saw I had this and I had the agency to put whoever I wanted to anywhere, I was like, I'm bringing back Southwest Conference, number one, and I'm bringing back the Big East. So because – those, you know, obviously the Southwest Conference has a lot of history and it was a major conference. And then the Big East, I mean, obviously not as deep and long a history, but I thought that was, especially toward the end of the BCS era before it fell apart, I thought it was a really fun league. And, you know, a lot of times it was the de facto automatic qualifier conference and you got a team out of there, maybe was ranked 20th or something. But you had some fun times with, you know, the Steve Slayton, you know, Pat White, West Virginia teams. And I remember even, you know, they're not in this group, but I remember South Florida even reaching number 2 Rutgers, reaching in the top 5. Like, it was an interesting group. But, yeah, bringing it back to Southwest Conference was, like, my number one priority. That's probably my biggest fever dream of in college football is, can we get the old Southwest Conference schools back together. And I understand why it failed, and I understand – or not failed, but I understand why it dissolved. And I understand what forces took it apart. But, boy, if we could get back to a place where we are able to drive to almost every road venue in the conference and have the familiarity, the rivalry, the intensity that goes back into that, gosh, I think it'd be so much fun to have. And that's actually what I've heard from some Big 12 schools now that – you have four, you know, former Southwest Conference members in the Big 12 now. And last year, I guess five, if you include Texas, that was some of the charm for like a school like Houston that came into the league. It was like, wow, this is what we've been missing, is seeing schools that are close to us and familiar to us. And we can drive up to even not just football. Like I had the AD at Houston told me a couple of weeks ago, is like the fact that our fans could go drive to the Baylor basketball game that morning and be back home at night was a huge plus, and that's kind of was my guiding light in trying to put these together.
Sam, it's almost kind of depressing to look at this because it just makes so much sense, and it is what we had, and now we don't have it, mm-hmm. and now I don't know if we ever have it again, right? I mean, unless there is some type of a Super League, but I mean, yeah, the de facto Southwest Conference, I mean, Arkansas being in there with the Oklahoma schools and all the Texas schools, like, it just looks right. Looking at the Pac-10, which is no longer going to exist, I mean, that's the way that it always was. That's the way that it should be. And, you know, save for, you know, Utah's not in this because you had to stick at 10 teams. But, I mean, even the teams that would get chopped off and end up in that frequent flyer, I mean, I think all those teams would be thrilled to play each other because of the regionality and just the possible rivalries. I mean, there's going to not be a perfect fit for everybody, but man alive, it was it kind of like almost bittersweet putting this together because it makes so much sense, but yet we know this is probably not anything they could put back in the box again.
Oh yeah, it was a lot of fun for one, but yeah, it was definitely bittersweet because I thought about, and I had this I think conversation with some of the folks in the comments afterwards. I sometimes wonder, you know, we talk about a 16-team playoff here. Obviously, we have the 12-team coming up. I sometimes wonder if we had installed a 16-team playoff in the 90s, which actually, believe it or not, was proposed. I think even as far back as the late 80s, the College Football Association was trotting out a plan in like 89 and shaking around the conferences for a 16-team playoff. I wonder if we had installed that way back when, or even in the mid-2000s, Could we have preempted all this realignment? Because initially what started the realignment was the TV eyeballs, but also the automatic qualification. And people wanted to be in the automatic qualifiers, the BCS six conferences. And that was one of the hangups. Like, okay, we can make it to that conference. And I'm like, man, if we had just had a playoff like this, could we have just stopped all that then and then create all that? But, you know, it's kind of water under the bridge at this point, and I don't think there is any going back.
Sam, which conference do you think would be the maddest that they lost some of these teams?
That's a great question. I mean, certainly the SEC. Like, well, I think it would be more because this SEC is 10 teams and doesn't have Texas and Oklahoma, which are coming in, obviously. And you lose some schools that have been around for a while. Like you lose a South Carolina and an Arkansas, you know, they came in the early 90s. It's, you know, we're going to more than 30 years now that they've been in the league. So those are the ones that I would think would be the hardest to pull apart, because I feel like they've kind of been in this together for a long time. And those 10 members that are in the one that I put together, those schools have been in it for almost ever. And that would be really difficult. And the other one that's, it's not about losing the conference, but being put into one, is Notre Dame. Cause we all know Notre Dame treasures independence. And that was kind of the interesting exercise for this too, was like, where do I put Notre Dame? Do I put them with the Big Ten, but I wanted to have, you know, a traditional Big Ten. Do I put them with, you know, some more Midwestern schools, you know, which would have put it with a Big Eight, but that seemed kind of awkward. So I stuck them with a Big East. And I think Notre Dame, eventually they may have to join the conference, but I think they're going to go down kicking and screaming on that.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. Now, as far as the relegation and promotions part of this, I can't say that I'm not intrigued by that. I just have major questions of how it would work, like budget-wise, right? Of just, you know, recruiting-wise, how are you going to tell guys, like, hey, come here, and then we may or may not be in a league your whole career. Like, that part of it, I think, obviously would need some more details. But Bill Connolly, you know, has been on this relegation train for a long time. I know there's others as well. But where do you kind of sit on that? Obviously, you've included it, so I think you have interest in it. But how do you think that could possibly work? And I guess just kind of take us into the teams that would make this interesting potentially.
Yeah, I don't like promotion and relegation being only for that one division. That, to me, I think that's short-sighted. I like the Bill Connolly plan, which he's been trotting out since about 2015, which is basically align all the power conferences with a regionally adjacent group of five conference and do it that way. And I love that. For instance, you know, maybe you would have the Big 12 and the American, so to speak. And you could have the two American schools go up and two Big 12 schools go down. You know, same thing with the SEC and the Sun Belt, or the Pac-12 and the Mountain West. And I think I like that idea. But the thing is we all know the schools in the power conferences are never going to go for that. They're never going to go for a system where they could actually get demoted and relegated. As someone who watches Premier League soccer, I love the concept. And when I first discovered it and I first started watching Premier League soccer like 15 years ago, I was like, after a few years, I was like, why don't we do this in the States? Like, this is a fantastic system, because it really creates intrigue at the bottom, because then you're not playing out a 4-8 season. Like, it means something at the end, because you're trying to survive so you can stay up, and it creates so much drama and intrigue. But you're right. The biggest hurdle is the finances, because if you get relegated, then that is a massive financial hit and reputational hit for your school. So in order to make something like that work in college football, I think you have to have some type of either insurance or pool of money for the schools that would suffer that, to kind of help them endure that. Because that, and we're talking, by putting the group of five schools in that group, you're talking to schools that can least afford a financial hit, as opposed to the other 70 who probably have a better shot at being able to take that kind of hit for a year.
Sam Kahn of The Athletic. Sam, I know you got to go. You've got another interview to do. Thanks a lot. The column was great and very interesting, and you've made me nostalgic, and I don't know if I love you or hate you for that. So,
thanks so much, guys. Appreciate y'all. Talk to y'all soon.
All right. Sam Kahn, the Techspert, here with us on 365 Sports.
This has been a Rogue Media Network production.